Welcome to azcardinals.com. I'm Darren Urban, and I'm here joined with Cardinals General Manager Steve Keim. Thanks for joining us for this live chat.
Absolutely. So
I suppose the best way to start this is, you know, as you come out here for the first time as a general manager, you know, what are your feelings? Are you approaching this any differently now than you did all these other years you've been coming to the Combine?
You know, not really, Darren. I think more than anything, you know, quite a few more meetings and that sort of thing. But this is really where I cut my teeth, and that's the evaluation process. So this is an exciting time for me. I always enjoy getting back to Indianapolis and getting to know the players for the first time on a personal level, being able to ask questions and interact with those guys in interviews at night. It really paints a better picture of a player's ability when you get to know him personally as well.
We're standing in the suite that the Cardinals have for the workouts and everything, and you actually were just talking about, you know, what your view is going to be like when these guys start working out. How much time will you spend watching these guys actually work out compared to some of your other duties?
I'll watch all of the workouts. The one thing that we'll do as well, we have two scouts who are stationed on the 40-yard line. We're getting handheld times, and as soon as the group is finished, those guys will come over and meet with me and Jason Light and Coach Arians and review all the times. So it's a fun process. It really is.
We've talked about this a lot of times, the two of us, but you know, how much of the stuff that's going to go on in this field impacts, you know, where you're going to grade these guys?
I mean, it's a piece of the puzzle. I mean, a lot of times you just want to reaffirm your thoughts as athletically, how does this player compare to what you saw on tape, as well as the stuff that we talked about at night, the interviews. It's an important part of the process, and it's a piece of the puzzle that certainly makes a big difference.
All right, I'll get to some of the fans' questions that I've accumulated here. On Twitter handle, The What, was asking about the possibility of Levi Brown playing guard. I mean, how do you kind of see that?
Well, I mean, obviously Levi has solely played tackle for us in his career. He's played right and left. So Levi has some versatility. I think the fact that Bruce wants our best five offensive linemen out there means that Levi could potentially move inside to guard. And that just depends on the combination of players that we either sign in free agency or draft that would move Levi inside. But looking at it on the horizon, I don't anticipate that happening. But you never want to say never.
I know I've seen Levi rehabbing at the facility. Is his rehab coming along pretty well?
Yeah, by all accounts, Tom Reed, I talked to our trainer last week about Levi, and he said he's doing a fantastic job, and he's healing very well.
Eric Holguin asked a question about the possibility of moving up or down in the draft. Kind of how is your philosophy about that, and do you expect to be active? Do you know that yet?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that my philosophy, my thoughts are to be as proactive as possible. And if there's a player we feel like we want to go get, I have no problem moving up, as well as the thought process of moving down and acquiring more picks. I think that any time that you can get value for the spot you're in and you can move down and get more picks later in the rounds, I think that's a strong possibility.
That's something that you don't really get a good feel for until you're right on top of the draft, though.
Exactly.
Right?
When you're usually on the clock, you'll have other teams. Or right prior to when you're on the clock, you'll have other teams calling. And you know, we're proactive about calling other teams and fishing and seeing if there's somebody that wants to make a trade. But for the most part, when you're on the clock, that's when all the business gets done.
Kent Hodder was asking, what kind of grading system do you implement in terms of how you figure out the draft grades?
Well, quite simple. I mean, we use a number scale, and it starts off with 9-0 grades. 9-0 grades are for players who we think are elite Pro Bowl talent, and then our 8-0 and above grades are solid NFL starters, and then all the way down, 7-0 and above, eventual starters, and then 6-0 backup players, and then 5-0 to 6-0 are players that we think are practice squad candidates, roster potential, and then below that, 49 and below are our free agents. So it's a fairly simple grading scale, but it doesn't necessarily mean that everybody agrees on the grade. I mean, it takes a special eye for evaluating talent, I think, to be a good scout. And we have quite a few young guys that are very passionate and do a great job for us.
And when you put the grades on these guys, the number grades on them, but then you'll discuss them all. And obviously, just because one guy might be 81 and the next guy might be an 80, that won't necessarily be how they land on the board because you've got other things to consider.
Right. I mean, there are some key factors. We always try to place the grade that best describes the player's talent and ability. Then we also have alerts that can be put on a player's tag, whether it's character issues, whether it's medical issues, suspensions, arrest. We have tags for all those sort of things. So you may have a player in a certain category based on his ability, but at the same time, we may not feel comfortable taking that player because of the background issues or concerns about his mental or work ethic.
When you look at potentially drafting a quarterback, let's say high, let's say a first-round pick, in today's NFL, is the possibility there for you to take that guy in a first round and be able to have him sit for a year? Is that something you'd be comfortable with if you were in that situation?
I think my philosophy, Darren, has always been, if you're taking a player that high, particularly at the quarterback position, I think that guy needs to be on the field and play for you. And to me, a player grows by being on the field and taking snaps, and I don't think you can ever replicate the live snaps that he gets during a game, whether it's the speed of the game, the timing of routes, reading defenses. A lot of those things, to me, you can't replicate in practice. So I think a guy needs to be out in the field and needs to be getting game time snaps to improve and to take you where you want to be.
All right, this is from Twitter account RealJR44. When you look at how the roster is going to be made up, how much does the salary cap impact that in terms of decisions you might have to make?
It impacts it big time. I mean, we have to have some areas where a lot of guys are getting paid a substantial amount of money. But at the same time, we always want to do a good job of making sure that their compensation equals their production on the field. If it's not, then we have to make some tough decisions and make changes, as well as rewarding players for their play. Darrell Washington is a perfect example. Last year, we felt like he was outplaying his compensation. We adjusted and extended his contract, and he's a guy that we're very excited with moving forward.
Is that the hardest part of the job in terms of making those decisions one way or the other, in terms of the pressure, in terms of making those choices?
Right. I mean, that can be. I mean, sometimes you don't want to give up on a guy too early, and then, quite frankly, you develop personal relationships with some of these guys, so that can be tough to manage. But at the end of the day, as long as you're doing what's right for the organization, that's all that matters.
A lot of talk about Chance Warmack, the guard, and possibly going high in this draft to whomever it might be.
Right.
What's your philosophy? A lot of people, the conventional wisdom is that you wouldn't take a guard really high in the draft. How do you kind of see that?
Well, I mean, I can understand that. But at the same time, I've always said that if a player is an elite player, and I talked about our grading scale earlier, if he's a 9-0 and above where you think he is a Pro Bowl-type talent, I think you take him and you don't look back. Now, would you prefer a left tackle or a quarterback or some of those positions that are harder to find where supply and demand is an issue? Absolutely. But at the same time, a lot of times in the draft, you're looking at risk-to-reward type situations. And any time that you know in your heart that a guy is that type of player, I think you take him.
When you talk about the difference makers and the risk to reward, does that change after the first round? Is it at all? I mean, is that more the focus of the first round, or do you look at that in the fifth round or the third round?
Well, I think generally when you look at the draft, and a lot of people's boards are probably very similar when you look at first-round talent,
right.
I think that once you drop into the second, third, and fourth rounds, you just start to see greater holes in the player, whether it's an athletic issue or whether it's a lack of experience, could be technique and fundamentals. I think those are all the things that you have to weigh in when you're picking in those rounds. But more importantly, we've always felt like the best player available that's still on the board is the guy you got to go with. And quite frankly, whether it's the fourth, fifth, or sixth round, if a guy's sticking out and he has a grade that you thought he may have gone a lot higher, you have to take that player. Because so many times when you start talking about need, how many times is your need in April the same as it would be the following October? I mean, based on injuries and contract issues, needs are always changing. So I think that as long as you're taking good players, you can never have enough depth in one position.
Paul Dinek asked, what are some of the new things that you've brought in since you've taken over GM in terms of maybe doing things a little differently, or how did you kind of want to approach it?
Learning under Rod Graves really helped me put a plan in place. I thought Rod did a great job. There were some things that I wanted to do differently. I wanted to spend a little more time on the evaluation process. Michael Bidwell gave me the opportunity to hire a director of football administration, Mike Disner from the league office, and Mike does a fantastic job managing our salary cap and communicating with me on a daily basis about where we are from a cap standpoint. Some of his ideas, some of his new trains of thought are refreshing. He was very influential in the new rookie compensation that the league implemented, and he's got some great ideas. And I think moving forward, we're going to give him the ability to sort of branch out a little bit and bring in some new ideas. And working with Jason Light is also a fantastic opportunity for the organization to be able to keep Jason. We promoted him to vice president of player personnel, and there's some other changes that are still to come probably after the draft.
And you also made the point when you were talking to the media today, because of your background, because of what you like to do,
right?
I think you made the point that you wanted to make sure you were make sure you could watch guys work out rather
right.
than worry about hotel rooms.
Right.
I mean, that's just a philosophy yeah. of making sure you're still doing that.
Absolutely.
Right?
I mean, there are administrative duties that I do have to take care of. I mean, that comes with the job. But at the same time, my level of expertise is evaluating talent and to make our organization stronger and to improve in with our player roster and managing our roster. I have to have a good understanding of what our own roster looks like and what the other players around the league look like to help us get better.
How much does depth in a draft impact who you draft? For example, let's say they said that, or you felt like this was a draft deep in safety and that was a position you wanted, and you also wanted, say, a tight end. There weren't as many, and there's a safety and a tight end butting up against each other. Would you pass on the safety earlier because you know you could get one later? I mean, kind of how do you see that, and how does the draft depth kind of impact?
Well, when we build our top 120 board, which is the board that we draft off of, we build that board and have those conversations already of, if we're in this position at 38 and we're picking, and player X is here and player Y is here, who would we take and why? And we have those conversations, and they can be long, drawn-out conversations, and not always do we agree on those type things. But at the end of the day, we make a decision, and that makes the process easier on draft day because it takes the emotion out of it. And you already know that you've had that conversation, and the next player up is the guy who's sticking out, and that's your 38th pick. And like I said, you already had that conversation, so the emotional part of draft day is the hard part, because it's, you know, this, why is that guy still on the board? And a lot of times you've already had, you know, calculated conversations that address that.
You know, it's funny, Coach Arians has brought up the Cardinal decisions. You guys mm-hmm. have talked about the Cardinal decisions a lot already, and a lot of fans always ask about, well, who's got the final say on draft mm-hmm. day? Who's got the final say? But, and I try and explain to them kind of that, which is, you guys have already had all those conversations. There's really no final say to have, because you guys have already hashed all that out long before the draft. Right.
Absolutely. We've had those conversations. Again, sometimes we agree to disagree. But at the end of the day, if there's a tough decision to be made in personnel, I'll make those decisions, just like Coach is going to make his decision on third down what play to call. So as long as we all stay in our lanes and we pay attention to the task at hand, I think that's what's most important.
When you look at pass rushers coming out of college, especially since, you know, there's not a ton of 3-4 pass rushers mm-hmm. coming out of college, how do you kind of judge between production and potential and rate how they're going to, you know, be able to do that on the next level?
Right. Well, when you start talking about some of the 34 outside linebackers, you get into a situation where it's not just being able to rush the passer. Obviously, there are some responsibilities in coverage, and that could be dropping to the curl and the flat and those sort of things. So you have to have a skill set, whether it's loose hips, quick feet, space skills, where you can adapt and transition to that position. So some of the guys who are really tight-wound and stiff in their movement, they may struggle as a 34 outside linebacker. So you have to take that into account. But to me, as far as pass rush goes, it's sort of like, if you're a productive pass rusher when you're in high school, you're a productive pass rusher when you're in college, you're probably going to be a productive pass rusher in the NFL as well. I mean, you just know how to get to the quarterback. And you've seen that over the years with guys like Terrell Suggs, et cetera.
when you do the interviews at night with these guys, I mean, how many are we talking about?
We have 60 formal interviews that that we have, and it's a great process. Bruce Arians, myself, Jason Light, Michael Bidwell, from time to time has an opportunity to spend time with us in the interview room, and it's great because we already have it scripted where there are certain asterisks in a book that we have already put together that outlines some of the issues that we want to talk to each of the player about, whether it's schematically, whether it's suspensions or arrests, that we want to touch on and make sure that we have a clear understanding of what this player is by the time he walks out of our room after 15 minutes.
And as we wrap this up, final question, obviously everybody's talked about the quarterback and the need there. Mm-hmm. What are some of the other positions that you kind of see as things that you would like to focus on in terms of improving that kind
right.
of thing?
Well, I mean, I think you always have to pay attention to what I just talked about, the pass rusher. Anytime you can find guys who can create pressure without manufacturing pressure and bringing a lot of people with the blitz, I think that's something you always have to look at. Corner depth. I mean, again, with all the teams going to 3, 4, and 5 wides, a lot of times your third and fourth corner become very important. I think that's an area where we need to look into and address. And you talked about it earlier, the quarterback position, getting some consistency out of that position and making sure that we are doing everything to help us succeed.
Well, Steve, we appreciate you taking the time to join us on azcardinals.com, and enjoy your time here at the Combine, and hopefully we'll do it again soon.
Thanks for having me, Darren.